Accession number 21095, Reel 1.
Hello, Pick, Reel 1. If I could ask you first of all about your family life before the war started, could you tell me where you were born and raised?
Well, I was born in Vienna. I know the nursing home where I was born, where every middle-class Viennese child seems to be born. It's called the Rudolfsheim, and which is on one of the in the outskirts of Vienna, in the 19th district. And after that, I remember being taken to play in a park up there in Vienna called the Türkenschanzpark. I have been to it, back to it recently, and looked at it, and I think I can vaguely reconstruct that where I was taken with other children. I have photographs, so I'm not quite sure how much of that I really remember and how much I recognize just from looking at the photographs. I remember the block of flats where we lived. I also remember the block of flats where my grandparents, my mother's parents, lived, because while I was in Vienna, I spent a lot of time with them, often staying there when my mother was away. I really remember virtually nothing about meeting my father. My parents divorced when I was 3 years old. I know that he came to see me, that he took me out, because I found that from correspondence where there was a dispute between him and my mother how much time he would be allowed to have with me. But I don't remember it. I vaguely remember that he was a very handsome man. I know very little about his family. They had a business in Vienna. They were merchants dealing in all sorts of goods. They were a very orthodox family. My mother always told me afterwards that one of the reasons why the marriage broke up was that she could not cope with this way of life. I don't think he himself was orthodox. I think it was his family. And it was the family that bore down on my mother, and which somehow obviously brought things to a head. I have a much clearer memory of someone with whom my mother fell in love after her divorce, but who was living in Paris, which was one of the reasons why she was often away. He was of Russian extraction. He was working in Paris. I know that she loved him very much. I have found letters that I wrote to him, which she kept, which show quite clearly that I saw him as a father figure, and he certainly wrote to me as if I was his daughter. I know that he was separated from his wife, but had not yet got a divorce, and had the war not intervened, I'm quite sure they would have married. As it was, he was stranded in France when war broke out, and he vanished, and I think more or less broke my mother's heart, but that's another matter. But while I was still living in Vienna, obviously I have vague memories of going to school, but so vague that I really couldn't tell you anything about it. One thing that I do vividly remember is that when I was 4 years old, and my mother often went to swimming pools with me. Vienna has a lot of swimming pools, and that's where people go when the weather is fine. And apparently no one was looking. I just lay flat on the water, and fortunately a few minutes later somebody found me at the bottom of the pool. Apparently I decided I wanted to swim. And so it was decided that I had to be taught how to swim, and I still have a certificate which proves at age 4 years I was qualified to swim. I remember very little. I really remember nothing about the Anschluss, except that we moved in from the outskirts of Vienna, where we were living, to a flat that belonged to a friend of my mother's, a businessman, whose offices were right in the first district of Vienna, and where there was a flat. And we moved into that because somehow it was thought it would be safer there. I should say that by that time my grandfather had died, and only my grandmother was still alive. I do have vague memories of the Gestapo coming one night to the flat, knocking on the door, taking my mother away, but she came back again the next day. I do not know, there must have been someone else there, but I don't remember who was there. But whatever it was, it was not long enough to really frighten me, but it obviously meant that my mother put even greater efforts into trying to get away. Sometime during that period, between the Anschluss in 1938 and 1939, in March, when I was put on the Kindertransport, a decision was obviously taken by my mother and her mother that her mother, whose family came from, I should have said, from Bohemia, from the old Czechoslovakia, that she should go to Prague, where she still had some family members. Because it was then thought that Prague was going to be safe. And I don't know why, because I think a lot of other people made the same mistake. They also made another huge mistake in that they gave all their jewelry, all their stocks and shares to one of those Swiss emissaries who materialized and offered to take out people's valuables. And they did this, and he disappeared. That's another story to which I should have to come back to in the post-war period, because they did try to find him, and at least my mother did try to find him. He was found, but he claimed that he had been caught by the Gestapo and that everything had been taken away from him. So in other words, nothing was ever found again. So anyway, I know that my mother, after the Anschluss, and I have to say I remember nothing of the Kristallnacht at all, which to me is a complete mystery. But I have no recall of that at all, and I don't know how that could have happened. But I do know that she, like so many others, you know, spent time queuing at the American consulate in Vienna, trying to get a visa, and you know, got a quota number, and trying all sorts of other things. How I was put onto the Kindertransport list, I don't know. The only thing, and this again, I'm jumping forward now, many years later, when I had started working as a journalist, and working on a paper called West Africa, and came to Nigeria, and met there by chance the Israeli ambassador in Nigeria, and this turned out to be someone who then called himself Ehud Abriel, who had in fact been the man who had negotiated with the Germans in 1938 and 1939 to organize the Kindertransports, and who had, because he was originally Viennese but had gone to then Palestine, and he had come back from Palestine to negotiate this, and of course they had to pay money for the children. It wasn't just that. It turned out in a way that I realized that I probably owed my life to him, and we became very, very close friends. And unfortunately, he died some years ago, but I really came to love him very dearly. He was a wonderful man. But anyway, that's another story which I want to come back to, because he tried very hard to persuade me to settle in Israel, and I resisted that. But I mean, that was much, much later.
Did you pick up any of the, tension in your family at the time, though? You know, your mother must have been quite frantic, and you were saying about the queuing up for the documents.
Well, yes, but, you know, and somehow, I don't know, it was still... you know, you have to remember that at that time the Nazis were more intent on getting the Jews out of Austria than trying to arrest them. They were, I mean, they took everything they possessed, but they were encouraging them to leave, especially the women, you know. I mean, a lot of men, I mean, they started sending men to the concentration camps quite early on, but it wasn't quite, you know, at the time, it was just the apprehension, the realization that awful things were going to happen. But, you know, at that time, I don't think either the German or the Viennese Jews were thinking so much in terms of the concentration camps, because at that time, the whole thrust was still, you know, get these people away, purify the greater Germany by having them out and take all their possessions. But, at that time, the killing and the detention was not the top priority. I mean, that started, sort of certainly in the middle of 39, but it, at the time when my mother and her friends were trying to get out, the whole question was still just get away from it. But of course, I have to assume that after the Kristallnacht, things became, the alarm obviously grew. But I can't put my I'm sorry, I'm not being helpful on this. I'm sure others have told you much more about this than I have.
But I wondered if I could ask you something about your mother. You know, your mother was really a single parent, wasn't she?
She was a single
parent. Yes. What sort of lifestyle did your mother have? Did she work, for instance?
No, she didn't. She never worked. The only thing which afterwards proved to be very useful is that, I suppose, when she was about 20, she had friends who were milliners, and she was always very good with her hands. And she was intrigued by this, and she spent some time with them learning how to make hats. And incidentally, also at that time, because hats and gloves went together, also learning how to make gloves. And I still, after the war, I remember she knew how to make gloves, and you know, handmade gloves to me are still something very special that I think, you know, nice things to have. But no, I think... She obviously, you know, finished school and then was sent to some kind of a finishing school in Vienna. I still have a handwritten cookery book that she started while she was in this finishing school with all her recipes. It's a book that she kept up really all through her life. She added to it, and it's all in her own handwriting. And I've tried to persuade people that there's material there for a book, but it's never got very far. But in any case, and I think apart from that, you know, she had her circle of friends. She spent a lot of time in the summer walking in the country, and she loved walking. She wasn't a serious climber, but she certainly loved mountains. She swam a lot. I think, you know, they led a very agreeable, sort of typical 30s middle-class life. She wasn't a bridge player, but she played rummy. She was a great opera girl. She really knew by heart virtually every Mozart and Verdi opera, and you know, would. I remember that was. That I have a vague memory of, even as a small child going for walks with her in the country, with her wearing a dirndl and singing from operas, things like that. So, and certainly I've inherited that from her, the love of opera and the love of walking. I think she was very happily married while they were married. After it went wrong, I think. She was never. I mean, she was very intelligent, everybody who knew her liked her. We had a very difficult relationship, which got more difficult as time went on, certainly not at that time. And she, I think she focused far too much on me because there wasn't, she had no, after the war, she had no real emotional outlet other than myself, and that, of course, created great problems. But she was a very attractive person. She was good-looking. She was always well-dressed. And as I say, people always liked her. And she was politically interested, and again, later on, I mean, one of the things for which I'm really hugely grateful is that she never had those feelings of utter hatred and resentment towards Austria that so many other refugees had. And I grew up being made to feel that, don't bear grudges against the whole nation. They weren't all responsible for what happened. And she went back very happily on holidays to Austria, and she certainly encouraged me to go. And I fortunately never had those kind of feelings that somehow every Austrian is a Nazi. So.
Coming, leaving your mother, what do you remember of that and coming to England?
Well, again, as I regretfully have to concede, I do not remember. I don't remember really being put on that train, though I feel just because there has been so much discussion of the Kinder transports, I'm almost beginning to think that I do remember something about being on the train, but I don't remember all this business about being allowed a small suitcase, about warnings that you mustn't carry any valuables, that you mustn't have any money with you, and so on. I don't remember any of that. I suppose simply just by talking about this, I sort of have a vague glimmer of remembering leaving that flat in Vienna, of which I have no visual description. I know the address because I found it written down, but I don't remember what it looked like at all. But maybe I just remember being taken to the station, and to the extent that I can remember anything, it must have been in the evening, not in the morning, not in the daytime. And I cannot recall details of the journey. I don't remember stopping at the border as some people do. I don't remember going through Holland and being welcomed in Holland by people at the station, at the railway sidings and so on. I don't remember any of that. I do remember arriving at Liverpool Street station. I don't remember the crossing either, and I don't know whether the train crossed or whether we were walked over on a boat and picked up another train. I just don't remember that. Though I think in those days the trains were still put onto the cross-channel ferries, but I can't be sure. I mean, there was a time after the war too when the trains still went through, I think. But anyway, and then I really do have a sort of memory of sitting, together with other children in this hall, I think on the floor, and people were being called up one by one. I'm told that we all had numbers. Again, I don't remember being given a number. I just remember being called up, and the first thing, I knew no English at all, and I've always got this vague memory of saying goodbye to the people who were meeting me, which was just about the only phrase that I did know. And then, again, I can remember being taken to a house in Mapesbury Road in Bromsbury in London, which is quite a leafy suburb. I have driven through those areas, and the houses are all large. I can recall being given a room on the sort of second floor of this house. The family who were looking after me, their name was Infield. Again, he was a businessman. I said the other day that he was a businessman. In fact, that he was a lawyer. And they were Jewish, but completely assimilated and not practicing. They had twins, a son and a daughter, and then another younger son. They sent me to a local school. I think it must have been a state school, but again, I don't remember. I've since then found a sort of certificate from the end of my first term, which shows that, you know, I was doing quite well in various subjects and that obviously learned English. But again, I don't remember going to that school, which is really quite weird, and I wish I could explain why I don't remember. I think I got on quite well with them. The twins were older than I was, by about 5 or 6 years, which, you know, at that time was already quite a difference, and they were already at an age where they were leading obviously far more interesting lives than I was. I did remain good friends with the twins, with very much less with the younger son. Unfortunately, the girl of the twins committed suicide when she was 25 or 26, and I've really never explored with her brother, her twin brother, just how she came to be so depressed, what the problem was. He himself became a solicitor, and we have always remained in touch. We see each other rarely, but we do meet, it's a good relationship, but it's not a close relationship. The parents themselves, I think, were quite disappointed when my mother arrived on the scene. My mother arrived in England in June of I came in March 39, and she arrived in June 39. She had managed to get a visa to Britain because one of her closest friends, who happened to be a distant relation of my father's, who had already reached England and had found her a family who wanted a maid and who were prepared to provide the affidavits and financial guarantees that were essential to secure a visa to England for a woman. Women had to go into domestic service. Nothing else was available to them, unless, of course, they had private means and didn't have to work. But in my mother's case, you know, there was not. I mean, for one thing, you couldn't transfer anything to England anyway. But in the meantime, all that had gone. And she came, and but the people where she was, whom I don't remember meeting, and I don't think I really did meet. They lived in Surrey, and they were not prepared to have me, so that question didn't arise. And I think we met in London, in the West End of London, and I think I must have gone there once or twice as well. But again, I have to say again, I don't remember. It's getting more and more embarrassing.
Was that very important for you, though, having your mother?
Well, it must have been. But you see, again, we hadn't been separated long enough for me to feel either that I don't remember any feelings of rejection, which so many other kinder transport children have talked about. I think I must somehow have believed from the beginning that, you know, that she really would be coming quite soon. It must have helped that this friend of hers was in London, who certainly came to see me and kept in touch with me, so there was a link. And I knew that she was working at getting her over to England. So perhaps because of that, I don't think I suffered from that at all. I think once she was here, of course, it must have been very difficult for me to accept that I was not with her and that I was with this family. And I don't know whether I asked myself, how is this going to work out? I must have done, you know, because I was old enough, but I just don't remember. And I don't think I was so complacent and certainly not devoid of feeling. So, again, I wish I knew what it was that I was trying to blot out so that I don't remember these things. I always say to myself, if only at some stage in my life I'd gone into analysis, I might have found out some of these things, but I didn't. But Anyway, but what sorry.
I was wondering how much of a culture shock it was, you know, coming to suburbia, as it were, from Vienna, this home of the yes. infields.
I can't give an answer to that.
I suppose
I do, you know, I've always adjusted fairly easily to where, whatever setting I've been in. You know, I've always travelled a lot. I've always had friends with whom I stayed, and I know that some people hate staying with however close their friends are for more than a day or two. They somehow feel, you know, it's an imposition to the friends, and you don't feel very comfortable. I'm a bit sort of chameleon-like. I mean, wherever I am, I sort of feel, most of the time, feel comfortable. So maybe I just settled. I mean, I have an American friend who once gave me a book which he inscribed to the Wandering Jew. I mean, you know, maybe I'm just... perhaps the ruthlessness that, you know, I've always sensed, you know, I've already sensed then. I don't know. Anyway, I don't remember. There must have been difficulties because, you know, I'm sure that, you know, one had to keep certain hours I don't know. I don't know what we did at weekends. I think I just sort of settled into that family life in a curious kind of way.
It would seem that you were well settled. The fact that you said they were rather resentful when your mother arrived, the Infields.
Well, I think they, you know, having decided they wanted to take in a refugee, I think they felt they wanted to bring me up the way they wanted to bring me up, and not the way anyone else might want to do it. And I think they felt that my mother would try to interfere with that. And that's certainly the way it worked out later on, because there certainly were deep tensions, because they wanted me to finish school and take a secretarial course and start earning some money and give up any thought of going to university. And my mother and you know, the Chorleys and all her friends said, you know, if she wants to go to university and can get a place in university, for heaven's sake, let her go to university. And that was a real point of contention. It went on for a long time, and, you know, I found letters about all this, and it's... but that came much later. But I think at the time, I suppose they wondered, well, how is this going to work out? They thought they'd taken somebody for life, and, you know, maybe this was just a very temporary thing. And then when my mother found this job with the, he was then Professor Chorley, later became Lord Chorley, and they were, you know, they were really sort of... Northern aristocracy, the Chorleys always were, and he was the professor at LSE, and his wife wrote books, but anyway, they lived in a very intellectual framework setting, and were much more affluent than the Infields had been, and had this lovely house in Stanmore. And I mean, today it's got I don't know how many houses on it, but at the time it just had their house, and with a huge garden and a pond, and it was really quite rural, even though it was in Stanmore, which even then was just a suburb of London. It was lovely, and they had this house in the Lake District called Randepike, which was on the Hawkshead side of Lake Windermere,